Blog Talk Radio.
All right, we are on the air for Fan for Racing with Catch Fence NASCAR Weekend Preview. This is Thursday night, October the 1st. And we are really looking forward to a fun night tonight. Joining me is our Fan for Racing writer, Brian Eberle. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Hey, Sharon. How's it going?
It's going great. Really looking forward to tonight's show. We've got a lot of racing to talk about, which is always a fun thing to do. But joining us at 9 o'clock tonight, Brian, is going to be NASCAR Chasm. He's kind of the humorous side of NASCAR, and a lot of people see his work at NASCAR.com. If they follow him on Twitter, they see a lot of his wit and the humorous side of NASCAR through his eyes. So really looking forward to chatting with him tonight.
Yeah, he should definitely be some entertainment for sure. Looking forward to what he has to say.
I do too. So we're not sure. I know Chris is traveling today. He was going to be on his way to Las Vegas for the Camping World Truck Series out there. So I'm not sure if we're going to exactly when or if we're going to hear from Chris. But I know he said if an opportunity presented itself that he would try to call in. So stay tuned for Chris Knight to show up hopefully sometime during the show tonight. Now, with that, I want to go ahead and get started with our preview, Brian, because, you know, we've been talking for weeks now about the tight points battle in the Can-Am East. And this week, they're going to be racing at Dover tomorrow night, Friday, October the 2nd. And it's possible that we could see somebody clinch the championship tomorrow night. So this is a really important race for fans to keep their eyes on. And if you're out in that Dover area, try to get out there and see the drivers race this race. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, hopefully they can get it in tomorrow with all the rain that's bearing down on the Dover area. It's looking like it could be a challenge to get racing in this weekend, but it is definitely going to be a great battle between William Byron, Scott Heckert, and Austin Hill to find out who's going to come away with the title.
Yeah, you bring up a great point, and I meant to talk about that too, is that I know the Hauler Parade and everything was canceled that was supposed to be taking place tonight because of all the rain that they're getting out on the East Coast. There's hurricane-level winds and rain that's taking place. So, you know, fans do be careful. But, you know, I hope they do get the race in tomorrow because, like I say, there's a tight points battle there. There's three drivers, William Byron, Scott Heckert, and Austin Hill are all in the running and could get a championship tomorrow. Byron only needs to finish ninth or better to wrap up the championship. If he leads a lap or he leads the most laps, he can clinch the title with finishes of 10th or 11th. If he does that, he's going to become the fifth rookie to win a championship title. And other drivers that have done that before him in the Can-Am East include Joey Logano in 2007, Ryan Truex in 2009, and Kyle Larson in 2012, and Ben Rhodes in 2014. Austin Hill, though, is going to be who he needs to kind of get through because he is a previous race winner, the defending race winner, and he wants to come away with a win at Dover. Also, another race winner there, Brian, is Corey LaJoie.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good battle between all those guys. Obviously, I think Byron can just, you know, go out there and have a good, solid race, keep all the fenders on the car and try to stay out of trouble. And I see him getting a top-10 finish if he avoids trouble and clinching the title. But, you know, his teammate Scott Heckert definitely willing to be there as soon as if Byron were to make a mistake or to run into some issues or have any mechanical problems. So I think it'll be a great race. It's unfortunate that it doesn't get televised live, but hopefully it's a great show to follow along online, and then we can all watch it when it airs on NBC Sports Network.
That's absolutely correct. And, you know, Scott Hecker is certainly another one of the drivers that's in the running for that championship. And he, along with Austin Hill, are both going to be trying to go for that win. Now, Austin Hill has won back-to-back at Dover the last 2 years, 2013 and 14. So if he pulls it off and he wins again this weekend, then he will be the first driver to win back-to-back-to-back at Dover. So that could be history in the making as well.
Yeah, he's definitely going to be someone to contend with at Dover. So it'll be interesting to watch how it breaks down between those three drivers. And then not only that, but we've got some other great names in the field too. We've got Brandon McReynolds making an E-Series start. So he won both of the East-West combo events at Iowa this year. So I expect him to be strong and be a factor all night. We've got Patrick Strapoli, who's been on the show before. He's running tomorrow night as well. So we got a pretty solid field of various drivers, I think, that'll put on a good show. Landon Castle also is running. He'll make just his third Pro Series East start. His best finish has been fourth at New Hampshire back in 2007. So it'll be a start for him as well. So he'll be somebody to watch. And then Peyton Sellers as well is in the field. So we got several drivers that, you know, you don't always see in any series race making starts that'll look to mix up the show as well.
Absolutely, and they could make it pretty interesting for the rest of these drivers. Brandon McReynolds has had a few wins this season. A lot of people remember he won both Iowa races this season when the East met the West. So now he's going to be coming to the K&N East. He normally runs in the West, and he could shake things up a little bit. As well as Landon Castle, Corey LaJoy, and, you know, Patrick Staropoli's won in the West, too. So he won at Irwindale. So you never know what can happen this weekend with all these different faces that we're going to see in the race. But Dalton Sargent, you know, some of our regulars are going to be there, too. Dalton Sargent, Kaz Grala, Nick Drake, Kyle Benjamin, Rico Abreu, all of those guys are going to be real top-notch contenders. They're all in the top 10, so they're all going to be competing.
Right, and it'll be interesting to see how the H. Scott contingent finishes. All five of their drivers right now are in the top 7 in points, and if Kaz Grala struggles a little bit or Haley and Abreu beat him out by a few spots, they could potentially move up and place five of their cars in the top 6 in points. So obviously a hugely strong organization that's producing great drivers and putting great cars out there on the track week after week.
Yeah, H. Scott Motorsports has just been phenomenal the last several years, and this year in particular. They really have some very, very strong drivers with J.J. Haley and Rico Abreu coming on board, Dalton Sargent, Scott Heckert, William Byron, the points leader. Those are all H. Scott Motorsports drivers. So, and as Brian said, all of them can finish like in the top 6 drivers in the series. So they've just had an incredible year. It's been really amazing. So I think whenever they do run this race, it's going to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, it should be a great show. One other driver we haven't talked much about yet, but Spencer Davis, he's 16 years old. He'll be making his fourth start in the K&N Series this year, and he's finished 6th, 3rd, and 5th in his 3 starts so far this year. I was out at Iowa covering the second combination event out there where he finished 3rd overall, 2nd out of the E-Series drivers, and had a chance to talk with him. And he's been really impressive at only 16 years old, and he's in the NTS Motorsports equipment, so he should be another guy to watch that could definitely be up there, top 10, top 5, maybe even looking for a victory, depending how things play out.
Yep, absolutely, absolutely. And I just think that fans will definitely want to keep their eye on this one. If you can't get out to the track, NBCSN has been broadcasting all of these races, and they will be broadcasting this particular race. Let's see, I'm looking for it here. Usually it's on Thursday, and for some reason I don't see it on my Thursday lineup here. I don't know
Yeah,
if I missed it.
it looks like it's set for Thursday, October 8th at 4 p.m. Eastern time. At least that's what
Thank
I saw
you.
on the release from the K&N series. So hopefully that's still the time. But set your DVRs for October 8th, 4 p.m. Eastern, and be able to check that race out.
Absolutely. Thank you. I appreciate that because
Oh, no problem.
usually I have that at my fingertips, as you saw my book when we were
I
in
have seen it, yeah.
Chicagoland, and for some reason it's not there this time, which is just amazing to me. I don't know how I would have missed that, but yeah, that definitely is something that fans look forward to, I'm sure, on Thursday nights. You can set the DVR and catch that race, and they usually run it a couple of different times, so that's just the first run, but I think it's been great to see NBCSN do that this entire season. Now, we also want to get into this weekend. We talked a little bit on Monday night about the Camping World Truck Series going out to Las Vegas this weekend, and they're going to be at their last standalone race out at Las Vegas this weekend, and I think that's going to be pretty exciting to watch as well. A lot of people expected Matt Crafton to win at Chicagoland, and we ended up with a brand new winner in John Hunter Nemechek. So I think he's going to be looking for some redemption, but I'm not sure that that's the track for Matt Crafton. He doesn't always do that well at Las Vegas.
Well, he does have 3 second-place finishes in his career. He has the most starts out of anyone in the series there at 14, and just the way that team has been running lately, I'd still give them one of the favorites this weekend, and definitely one of the trucks to beat out west.
Who are your other top drivers to watch out there, Brian?
John Hunter Nemechek's been so strong lately, so I really like him and what that team's been putting together. I'd expect a strong run from them. Spencer Gallagher would be looking for a great run at his home track. Austin Theriault's finally getting back in the Brad Keselowski racing truck again. He's been several races where he hasn't run, and he's scheduled to run, I believe it was the last 8 races of the season. So he will be in that truck for the balance of the year. I expect him to continue to be strong. And then, as always, the Kyle Busch Motorsports trucks. Matt Tift will be in the 51, and then Christopher Bell, who won earlier this year at Eldora, he'll be in the 54 truck. So I'd look for both of those guys to be strong out there as well.
And Christopher Bell's coming off of a win. He's been racing, when he's not racing NASCAR, he's out there racing other events. And I think he just recently won. So I would look for, he's coming off of some momentum there with a win just this past weekend.
Right. And why I don't expect him to necessarily go to victory lane watching Travis or
Right.
sorry Travis Pastrana returning to the series. I think it's kind of a cool thing, and hopefully we'll get some people from his areas of racing into the NASCAR realm of things, and hopefully he'll have a solid run out there and maybe get himself worked back into some more NASCAR races in the future.
Yeah, I think that's awesome that we're going to see Travis Pastrana back in NASCAR. A lot of people were heartbroken when he left NASCAR and went back to what he was doing before. To see him coming back in through the truck series, I think is really great because I think this is a second chance for him, and I think like you say, he could bring a lot of new fans and people into the sport. So Travis Pastrana is going to be great for NASCAR.
I agree. I had a chance to cover a couple of the Xfinity races in 2013 when he was running in the series full time, and just seeing him in the garage area and the way he interacts with fans, and just a guy that just seems truly happy to be where he is and get the opportunities he's had in his career. And NTS Motorsports is obviously giving him a strong strong truck. They put good trucks out on the track, and he has one truck start at Vegas before, back in 2012, only finished 17th, so I'm sure he'll be looking to improve upon that finish, and we'll see where he ends up on Saturday night.
Perfect, perfect. So definitely something for fans to look forward to. Eric Jones, I agree with you. I think Eric Jones is going to be strong from Kyle Busch Motorsports. Ben Kennedy didn't have a. He's been having some hit or miss races, but I really think he's another strong contender. Timothy Peters, we talked a little bit about that from Red Horse Racing. He has been. That organization has been showing some good signs. He had a strong finish last time out. Tyler Reddick, another driver that's looking to have a good run here. Spencer Gallagher is going to be in his hometown with his sponsor in their hometown, and GMS Racing used to be home-based in Las Vegas. So this is a huge, huge race for Spencer Gallagher as well.
Yeah, I would agree. As you guys know, we had Neil Reed on the show the other night from Las Vegas Motor Speedway, and he was just saying that Gallagher is going to be doing plenty of appearances and kind of work with the track leading up to the race this week as well. So it's obviously a huge weekend for him. He finished 13th there in his only start at Vegas last year, so he'll be looking to improve upon that. And he's currently 9th in the point standings, but only 14 points behind, moving up to the 8th place spot. So he'll be looking for a good, strong run to make a great deal for his sponsor and the sponsor's home track. That's always a place where drivers want to run well when they're in their sponsor's backyard.
Absolutely, absolutely. Brendan Poole's going to be in the race this weekend, too, also racing with DMS. So, you know, I think it's really great to see Brendan Poole. He's been racing in the Xfinity Series, but to see him racing also in the Camping World Truck Series, I think this is a great opportunity for him as well.
Yeah, I would agree. It's great to see him getting a shot in the trucks. I mean, he's kind of bounced around between, you know, ARCA and some other series throughout the last several years, but he's done fairly solidly in his races this season with H. Scott, and hopefully that'll lead to some bigger and better things for him next year as they look forward to 2016.
And another driver that with GMS that's been doing really great, Brandon Jones.
Yeah, exactly. So we got, like you said, a lot of talent. That's exactly why I love the truck series. Every driver we've brought off here is, you know, either been in the series for a while, like Matt Crafton. You've got so many young guys coming up. You've got guys like Travis Pastrana coming over. It's just a really great field with, you know, so many different drivers, and I think it'll be a great show out there on the West Coast.
Well, I'll tell you what, next Monday night we have Brandon Jones coming on the show at 9 o'clock, and secretly, I would really love to see him get a win.
that would be good if we'd have a race winner already lined up for the show. It would make your life easier, right? You wouldn't have to even reach out to anyone.
Exactly.
Job is done.
But tell me, who is your favorite to win at Las Vegas?
You know what? I'm going to stick with Crafton. He's got 4 wins on the mile and a half this year. He does have 6 top fives in his 14 Vegas starts. And I did an article on him earlier this week for Motor Racing Digest. And, you know, he just kind of talked about how it was salt in the wound where he's finished 2nd there a few times. And I think maybe he finally breaks through and hits the jackpot, so to speak, in Vegas this weekend. But what about you? Who's your favorite?
Well, you know, I have to agree with you to a certain degree. I think Matt Crafton is going to be a strong contender this weekend. And I think you're right. I think he's got a lot of salt that he's trying to kind of regroup and get himself back into position to go back to back to back and to be the first driver who has ever done that to win 3 consecutive championships. But I think in order for him to do that, he's going to have to get through Eric Jones. I think Eric Jones is another driver that's going to be a strong contender this weekend.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Can't argue with that pick. Eric Jones did win when the trucks last visited Vegas last year, and Crafton's just 7 points behind Jones, and Reddick's 19 points back. So those 3 drivers are going to, I think, make a pretty solid points battle. Reddick's lost some spots here over the last few races, but I think he'll get himself back up there as well, and I think going down the final stretch here. They've got, you know, six events left that it'll be a great points battle to watch even without having to chase format like the Cup Series.
Absolutely. So definitely Camping World Truck Series, the name of the race is the Rhino Linings 360. I think it's going to be a really huge race to watch this weekend. Weather permitting, they are actually racing on Saturday, October the 3rd, and you should be able to watch that, I believe, at 1 p.m. on Fox Sports 1. So fans will want to keep their eyes.
I think that's actually 10 p.m. It's 10 p.m. It's a night race out there.
Oh, you're right. It is 10 p.m. You're right. I misread that. So 10 p.m. Eastern time out at Las Vegas, keeping in mind that they're out on West Coast time out there. So it seems a little bit late for us people that are in the Central and Eastern time zones, but it's regular starting time out there in the West. So you are absolutely right. That's a 10 p.m. Start time. I think the TV coverage will start at 9:30 p.m., and as I mentioned, that should be on Fox Sports 1. You can always listen on MRN or SiriusXM Channel 90 as well. They're going to race 146 laps, 219 miles in the Camping World Truck Series race. So a lot of really, really exciting things going on in that race, and I think fans are definitely going to want to keep an eye on everything that's going on. Another driver that we did not mention, well, we talked about Dylan last time getting the 500th truck race win. He won last week, and that was a huge, huge win for Austin. Austin Dillon won that.
Yeah, Austin. Yep.
Okay. Now let's go ahead and talk about we've only got a few minutes here. We'll probably get interrupted. So let's save the Xfinity and the Sprint Cup Series for after talking with NASCAR Chasm here. And okay. let's talk real quick about some of the headlines that have been happening this week. And we'll talk with NASCAR Chasm about this as well. Some of the headlines that have been going on in the NASCAR world this week, because there has been a lot. The team owners met on Tuesday, and I was hoping Chris might be here to talk a little bit about what happened during that meeting. Have you heard anything?
No, just that they're kind of talking about different ownership models that could make sense for the Cup Series, and you know, I think franchising and whatnot was tossed around, but it seems, at least from what I've heard, kind of tight-lipped just between the owners at this point and more to come. NASCAR did just release a statement saying they're trying to figure out the best way to let their owners be profitable and operate, and that's about all I've heard at this point.
Yeah, I really have to applaud NASCAR for reaching out to the owners and reaching, you know, and allowing the drivers and the communication lines. I think it's so much more open now than it's ever been within NASCAR, the organization, and doing this type of thing of reaching out to the owners and having these kind of conversations. And I applaud them for that, because I think getting their input when they're making some of these big decisions is really the right thing to do. So I think this is a good step that they're taking. I know there's been a lot of conversation about possible franchising with the owners, and it would be interesting if we knew how they felt about that, if they're in favor of franchising or if they have a different business model that they think would work. I'd love to be a fly on the wall and hear those conversations.
Yeah, that would be interesting, and I'm thinking maybe over the next couple weeks here is some of the press gets a chance to talk to some of the owners at the track. Maybe a little bit more will come out about that, and we'll continue to learn more.
Absolutely. Some other things going on. Daytona, as we know, Daytona Rising, a lot of changes out at Daytona. They took out the backstretch tower. this week, and they're putting in larger video display boards, I guess competing with the mega screen that they have down at Texas Motor Speedway. So fans that go out to Daytona, there are huge, huge changes taking place there, and there's a lot to look forward to there as well.
Yeah, I would agree. That seems like a pretty cool project they've got going on down there. I haven't been fortunate enough to make it to experience the Daytona before the Daytona Rising Project, but I can't wait to see it with the Daytona Rising Project in, and I won't know what I was missing before.
I'll tell you what, it sounds to me like it's going to be like state-of-the-art and kind of the role model for the future of a lot of different tracks. So it definitely is going to be a premier racing facility, and I can't wait to see when they get this whole project done. But it just sounds fascinating, everything that they're doing, and I think they have the fans in mind with a lot of the changes that they are making. So that's always a good thing, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, as much as people like to come back at NASCAR and sometimes complain about things, it's definitely one of the most fan-friendly sports out there that I feel like tries to cater to the fans at every corner as much as they can.
Okay. I agree. Now, another big news item this week, Gene Haas announced his F1 team driver for the only American F1 team. So I thought that was pretty interesting news. This guy, Gene Haas, the F1 team, is going to make their debut in Formula One at the World Championship in 2016. And they're bringing in Romain Grosjean. He's a 29-year-old driver who has competed in 79 Formula One races. He scored 10 podium finishes, with his most recent being a third-place result in August at the Belgian Grand Prix. He's right now fifth in the point standings, so he's a very highly regarded driver in the series already. And for Gene Haas to bring him on for his F1 team for this 2016 season, I think is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I think the great thing is now that we've got an F1 team based here on American soil, hopefully that'll continue to grow their fan base within America as well as you know, NASCAR fans and everyone, fans of motorsports, start watching a little bit more F1 action.
Absolutely. And something for fans to kind of keep their eyes on is the NASCAR Hall of Fame has announced that their tickets are going to be going on sale for the induction ceremony that will be taking place in January, Friday, January the 22nd. So, but tickets will be going on sale Tuesday, October the 6th. So if you'd like to be a part of that, you definitely want to mark your calendar for that October 6th date. Okay. Let's see here. Let's talk a little bit, do a little bit of a lead-in for NASCAR Chasm. He's going to be calling in here momentarily. I've been following NASCAR Chasm, as I'm sure you have too, Brian, for ever since I've been on Twitter, which has been two, three years at least now. And he's just a funny guy. He's got a really interesting and humorous way of looking at the sport of NASCAR. And he's really endeared himself within the NASCAR community with his perspective. So it's been kind of fun watching him kind of progress.
Yeah, it's always entertaining to, like you said, have viewed his tweets for the last couple of years, and now that he's kind of got himself on NASCAR.com and been able to do some other things within the sport, you know, I've always enjoyed reading his, you know, texts from the drivers as he, you know, makes up funny texts that drivers would be sending back and forth to each other. Just the way he comes up with it all is, you know, I consider myself to be a pretty funny, sarcastic guy most of the time, but I can't even come close to some of the stuff he comes up with related to NASCAR and its drivers.
Yeah, it really is amazing, and how quickly he comes up with some of these ideas. He's always got his ear to what's going on in NASCAR, and he just picks up on different things pretty quickly, and is able to put an interesting, humorous bent on it. And I want to talk to him a little bit, and I've told him this, so he's prepared, about how he got started along this path that he's taken, because he's gone from being just a fan that was on Twitter to becoming a sensation within the NASCAR community. And I think it's pretty fantastic that this is happening for him, and that to watch that progression take place has been really kind of a fun thing to see happening. So we're trying to bring him into the queue as we speak. So hopefully, here he comes. Okay, so with that, we are ready to introduce our next guest. He's known as NASCAR Chasm on Twitter, and more recently, a lot of you may have seen him at NASCAR.com. So we want to welcome you to the show,
Thank you
NASCAR
very much
Chasm.
for having me. Thank you very much. Yeah, I heard part of your intro before I came on. That was very kind. I was wondering who you were talking about. That could not have been me.
Well, I tell you what, I've been watching your Twitter account for at least a couple of years, and it's been really a fun thing to watch, to see how fans have embraced your sense of humor, your point of view, and how quickly you come up with these ideas is just astounding to us. So give us a little background, NASCAR Chasm, about how all of this began for you. What kind of started you on this path?
Well, this would have been, I think it was 2010, when Twitter was kind of still in its infancy and it hadn't really blown up into what it has become nowadays. And so I was just sitting on a couch watching a Pocono race, and I think it was back when it was 500 miles. This was before they had shortened it to 400. And so I'm just sitting there kind of despondent, kind of throwing off all these stupid comments to my wife and everything. And literally just sitting there at that moment, I was like, what the heck? Let's open up it. Let's look at this Twitter thing. I've heard about it. So I open it up there on my phone and think for 5 minutes, what is the single most stupid, unpronounceable handle you can come up with? We came up with it, and we slapped it on there. And it kind of just started from there and gradually picked up a follower here and there. And then I'd say it picked up the most steam when it was Jeff Gluck, formerly of SB, he was with SB Nation at the time, and now he's doing very well at USA Today. But he was one of the first ones to see this account and kind of enjoy it. And so he got in touch with me, and it's the first thing we ever did, I guess, as a contributor, was just a little image of the week thing for SB Nation. And from there, Jeff moved on to his USA Today gig, and more opportunities kind of arose, I guess, as it were. And now we're, I guess you could say, full-time with NASCAR.com, which genuinely was nowhere like in the vicinity of what I thought this would be, in 2010 when I was sitting there watching the Pocono race. But I attribute it to maybe 4 to 5% talent, but really 95% luck. When you started writing for NASCAR.com, when you think about how this whole thing started, you really can't have an ego about it. There's a large amount of, you hit 5 out of the 6 numbers on the Powerball, really, with this. So that's kind of the big story. I wish I could say that there was this big grand plan right at the get-go to achieve what we're doing now, kind of. But no, it really all happened by accident and through the kindness of strangers, really. So it was, and so that was it. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think that's part of the charm, though. I think the fact that it just kind of happened, as you say, by accident, You just kind of got out there and put it out there, and fans took to it. Jeff Gluck took to it. I think that's part of the charm of the whole thing here. So I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's well, I think one of the things that really helped was back in 2010, people, I think this was before, I don't know what you would call it exactly, but you know the point when people actually started being mean on Twitter and it kind of got a little bit less fun to be on? This started well before that, and so I'm, you know, I think, like, boy, had I tried to start this, like, a year or two before, I mean, I would have been shut down so quick, you know, because, at this point, every time you put something out there, you develop a steady kind of group of non-fans who remind you how much you suck, you know, on a weekly basis. So, had I started this, you know, a year ago, this would have just completely flatlined. So I kind of lucked out in terms of when it all started.
Absolutely. Now, with me tonight is one of our Fan for Racing writers, Brian Eberle. And I think he may have a question or two for you as well.
Oh, fire away.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Obviously,
I believe I've met you, right?
We met last year, I think, at Chicagoland.
Chicagoland, that's right. I remember you.
Yep.
Yes, of course.
I'm a Chicago-based guy. So anywhere in the Midwest, I try to get to cover races. So
Excellent.
You've obviously gotten to do a lot of kind of cool things over the last, like, few years. Have there been any kind of big, like, aha moments for you where you're kind of like, man, I can't believe this has blown up into what it has become?
Yeah, there's been several. I'd say the big one was, it would have been last April when I got a direct message from the people at Outback Steakhouse. They were like, we would like you to come to Richmond, and because we're doing a giant activation at the out in kind of the Turn 3 area, and so we kind of want you there to help with our promotion. And by the way, can you do the Q&A with Kevin Harvick out there? And so that was just, I mean, you can't say no to that. And so I was like, absolutely. And then, you know, it's one of those situations where you got to be like, well, of course you're going to do it. And then you say yes. And then you're like, boy, I've never done a Q&A with a driver ever again, you know? I was like, can I start low? Can I get, like, Matt DiBenedetto first and work my way up or something? Because you're giving me Harvick, man. But it went really well. We did that. We got to do for the past 2 years something called the Sideshow at Texas Motor Speedway, where it was the Orange Cone, the Mini Chad, NASCAR Wonka, and my son. And
I remember this.
Those guys are all wonderful, also, and so funny. And they what they did, Texas Motor Speedway gave us our own scanner frequency, and so basically we sat up in a suite and just watched the race. And for lack of a better term, just BS'd our way through it, hopefully throwing out witty banter here and there, and fans got to listen in. And so that was for the last 2 years, and that was it's not happening this year, but it was a lot of fun just to have a track, you know, notice what you're doing and bring you all together and give you this platform to basically just do whatever you want on the air. It was tremendous.
Right.
But, you know, obviously the big one is when NASCAR.com says, hey, we'd like to have you on, and you really got to, are you sure, you know? And, you know, when they say yes, you got to be like, no, really, are you sure, you know? So, I'd obviously say that's the big one. The final one, and I'm sorry that I'm blathering here, but it was this year.
That was great.
It was this year before the Michigan race. We are kind of standing behind. They had rushed driver intros because there was a storm imminent. And so myself and I'm standing with my wife and the Twitter. Are you familiar with Annoying Race Fan?
Yeah.
Have you heard of him?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Indeed. He's become a good pal. And so we're basically just kind of standing behind the stage where, you know, all the drivers are just kind of milling around and waiting to be introduced. And so I see Brad Keselowski and Martin Truex and Carl Edwards are kind of sitting there waiting to be introduced. And as always, Brad is on his phone messing around. And we're just kind of standing there taking it all in. And, you know, I look up and I see Brad, and I've met Brad before. And he's always been very cool. and I see him kind of nudge Truex and Carl, and he points at me, and I can hear him, I can see him mouth the words, "That's NASCAR chasm." And so I'm like, oh, God, what, oh, geez, Brad, oh, man, I'm busted. And so, you know, Truex kind of does the head nod thing, and Carl just kind of points at me, you know, and kind of gives you that, I know that's you look. And I was like, why are you doing this? You're not on Twitter, bro. What's going on here? And so I just kind of wave and kind of turn around, and I look at my wife, and I'm like, oh, my God, hon, did you just see that? And she's like, and she kind of points behind me, and I turn around. Carl Edwards has walked across the stage. He's like, come here, dude. I'm like, oh, God, what? And so I, right there before intros, he was like, oh, man, I really enjoy your stuff. I think you're funny. And I'm like, oh, my God, thank you so much, you know. And I was like, never join Twitter, man. It'll take your life away. So, yeah, but that it was still just really cool for him to walk over and, you know, give you 30 seconds of his time right before he's supposed to hop in the car and race. That was a pretty surreal moment, so.
Yeah, that is awesome, and it goes to show that you've obviously expanded beyond Twitter as well with Carl, knowing who you are. He's not even on the platform.
He's got to be on there somewhere, secretly. Yeah.
that wouldn't be bad. You see some of the stuff people tweet at drivers. I don't know how anyone's on there anymore, right?
Yeah, you know, that's what's kind of surprising. And, you know, you remember, you think back early on, you remember the days when Denny Hamlin was so active on it? And just constantly on there and constantly chatting with people, and he was really funny. And then they kind of cracked down a little bit on what you could say on Twitter, and then suddenly the stupid mean people movement kind of, you know, just basically kind of sort of pushed him away from it. And it's sad, but you can't blame him. You know, I wouldn't get on there either if that was the case. You know, it's sad now that, you know, a lot of the entertainment that drivers give is when they're basically responding and giving crap to the haters, you know. it's like, boy, I wish you could just have a civil conversation, you know. But, I don't know if those days are here anymore, but we sure are grateful for the drivers that are on there. You know, they are quite fun.
Exactly. How did you become a NASCAR fan? How did you get into it in the first place?
That would have been, boy, the year I got married, which was, my wife can't listen to this because I'm going to forget what year we got married. But anyways, I knew nothing of it, really. When you grow up in Indiana, obviously your focus, when it comes to motorsports, you know, is the Indy 500 Indianapolis every May. That's your big thing. So when you grew up in the 80s, you know, and I live in a small town called Upland, which is there's no need to tell you where Upland, Indiana is because it's the middle of nowhere. Indiana is Indianapolis and a bunch of corn. So just trust me, it's a town in Indianapolis, Indiana. And we always went to the 500. It was the 80s, so we're talking about the salad days of Mears and Unser and Andretti and all that. So, and then it just kind of disappeared. I was not a motorsports fan. Then the year that I got married, my wife had her bachelorette party out in Las Vegas. She was the last one to leave on Sunday. It just so happened that her brother and his friends were out there for the race at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. They were like, oh, you're catching a late red eye. We have an extra ticket. Why don't you come on? And so just on a lark, she went. She's like, all righty, I'll go, you know, watch these hillbillies turn left. That's fine. And so, you know, she called to tell me this, and I'm like, I can't believe you're doing this. My God, what color is your neck, woman? And so I'm at work, and she keeps sending text messages. And, you know, back then they were hard to send. They were like, OMG, this is awesome. And I was like, what are you talking about? You know, she's like, this is so fun. And later on at the airport, she called to tell me, oh, my God, it was a blast. It was loud. There was wrecks. There was yelling. It was so fun. And so she started actually watching them at home. And, you know, at this point, I'm like, you know, who am I marrying here? But but I started watching it, too, and kind of got more and more interested. And I'm like, you know who I like? I kind of like this chubby kid with a bad attitude from Columbus, Indiana. I think that's the guy I'm going to root for. You know, and of course, that's the year that he failed to make the chase. And then it just blew up from there. The following year, we decided, let's go to a race. We can drive to Michigan International Speedway and see it. And it really just took one race to be like, okay, this is what we're going to be doing. You know, I'm done spending money on Cubs tickets. I'm done, you know, trying to get Bears tickets. This is the new thing we're going to be doing. And it's, that's basically how it started right there. Just kind of a accidental, you know, serendipitous extra ticket, for my wife. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Great story.
Yeah.
Now, I want to, you know, you mentioned Tony Stewart. You didn't mention him by name, but we knew who you were talking about.
Yeah.
But,
I meant,
you know,
Tony. I was talking about Tony Raines, actually. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
I thought it was fantastic when I realized that the announcement was going to come this week and that we also had you scheduled for this week because, and maybe you knew that when you gave me this date. I don't know. But I really wanted to get your perspective on the news about Tony Stewart and Clint Bowyer.
You know, the thing, at least for me, that really, I don't know, put a smile on my face, kind of made me happy and accepted a lot more, was his demeanor and just his attitude during that press conference. You know, I think leading up to it, we kind of knew it had been speculated for, you know, days and days and days. Oh, the Kevin Ward thing is weighing on him, and he's not recovered from the sprint car accident, and this and that. He's not running well. And so, you know, leading up to that, I don't know, I was kind of, I guess, expecting maybe a little bit of a more somber, kind of morose affair that was going to be hard to watch as, you know, somebody who's been a fan of his for so long. But just to kind of hear him laughing and joking and just kind of, you know, talking about how, I don't know, just how accepting he was of the whole thing. And I guess kind of the peace that the next step is going to bring him, you know, where you're no longer having to go here on a race weekend and go here on a race weekend and have your schedule completely packed. You know, he talked about, I can, you know, go off and run this sprint car race, or I can go run the Rolex 24 or the big blocks here. You know, he was talking about that, and like initially I was really sad, but then I'm like, now I'm kind of jealous. You know, he's had this illustrious career. Yeah, the last few years have been maybe, obviously not what he would want them to be. But, you know, now by doing this, he can kind of sort of, you know, achieve this next step, this piece, this presence in motorsports that will, you know, he'll still always be there, just, you know, not in a driver capacity. And, you know, if you've been to, like, the Mud Summer Classic, let's say, and I don't know if either one of you have had the chance to go to Eldora for this event.
Oh,
but
on my bucket list, I've got to get out there.
Oh, you have to. But one of the cool things is you're there all day, and, you know, you see Tony Stewart, the track owner, out there. And, you know, he's not – it's weird because he's in the infield, and he's working. He's doing – you know, he is the track owner, and, you know, he's not just sitting up in a suite because, you know, there aren't that many suites there. He is riding around on his four-wheeler, and he is directing the water truck where to go. You know, he is hopping in the tractors to mash the dirt down. He is going from official to official saying, hey, do you need water? Do you need water? And it's just weird to see him. You can just tell how much fun he's having, you know. When you see that, and when, you know, I got to see that this year, and you think, boy, that's going to be his next step. It's like, as a big fan of his, I have to be happy that he's going to, you know, finally, like I said, get that peace, get that solace that he's probably been looking for. And when it comes to Clint, I've been a unabashed Clint fan for a while through the whole Richmond affair, whatever that was. I think that helped the press conference too, because I don't know, you know, whatever, here's the thing, whatever Clint walks in the room, it doesn't get more boring ever. You know, Clint to me is like, yeah, Clint to me is the guy who walks in the room and the party starts. He is the instant mood elevator. And I'm quite pleased to see what he can, finally do in stellar, you know, in a stable situation and in stellar equipment. You know, I don't know, you know, it seemed like an MWR, not the most stable situation in the world. So him kind of coming from that that similar background of, you know, owning, you know, he owns dirt teams also, I'm very, very excited to see what Clint can do. So.
So, and I was very happy to know that they were going to have Clint Bowyer there and make that transition right then and there. So, you know, I think you probably give a sentiment that a lot of fans are feeling for Tony Stewart. It's been a challenge, I think, for him for the last couple of years, to say the least. And I can't imagine anybody else stepping into those shoes and handling it as well as he has.
We say that those are big shoes to fill and an even bigger fire suit.
Perfect.
Sorry about that. Yes.
That's quite all right. We were expecting some of that tonight, so
good, not a problem.
but absolutely, I think he's handled these situations amazingly well, and I think it's really not that surprising that he hasn't necessarily had the results that we've seen from Tony Stewart of the past. And I think this is going to be a good move for him. I agree with you. I think it's a good move for him. I think it's going to bring him a lot of joy, and I think it sounds, you know, like he's ready for this next chapter and to close this chapter of NASCAR. So I appreciate your perspective there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's like you could almost visibly see just kind of a weight lifting off the shoulders, you know, and with that finally off, you know, who knows, maybe he might just, he might go off on a tear in 2016, who knows, but, you know, it's atypical for Tony because we're so used to him just, you know, being just a top performer on the track. You know, it's not like he's the first athlete to, you know, I don't know, suffer from a lack of performance in his later years, you know, I mean, that's pretty much common.
Right.
And so it's, he knows when to step away, and you know, like we said, he's got the capability and the means to now travel off here and there. The dude can go to Monaco with Gene Haas if he wants now. You know, my God, can you picture Tony Stewart? Can you picture Smoke Wild on Monaco? Oh man, jeez, I want to be around for that periscope.
There was a quick minute there where that thought did cross my mind because we knew about the Gene Haas announcement, right? And then we hear about the Tony Stewart announcement, and I'm going, oh, my God, you don't think, do you?
Yes.
And then it did cross my mind. We'll just put it that way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think I was going to say the funny part now is if you go to the Stewart Haas campus, call it whatever you will, you got the Stewart Haas Racing Shop and then the Haas F1 Shop. And, there's a fence separating the two, but it's just kind of funny to think, boy, what are these people thinking of people in that building and vice versa? You know, it's like, you know, do you wonder, do the Stewart Haas people look at Haas F1 and see a bunch of, you know, like mimes and beret wearing people, you know, and do the Haas F1 people look across and see like, you know, some, you know, like Gatlinburg, Hatfield and McCoy dinner show going, like, what do they see? So, yeah, it's, we might do a piece on that later on. We'll see.
Yeah, that sounds like a good one.
Yep.
So, Kazem, I tell you what, it's been a sheer pleasure to have you on the show with us tonight. We hope you'll consider coming back and joining us again somewhere down the road here.
And, oh, absolutely.
Just, you know, before you go, I want to make sure that fans know how they can follow you. I know you've got a whole slew of fans already following you, but in case somebody's been under a rock and they don't know that you exist, we need to let them know how they can follow you.
Gotcha. It's probably just better to stay under that rock at this point. Really, just stay under the rock, people. No, it's at NASCAR, Chasm, NASCARCASM. That's all it is.
I guarantee I'll be
tolerable. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Snapchat. And, you know, basically if you go to Twitter and look at the bio, you can get the file names for all the others. You know how stupid the internet is. Like at Instagram, it's like NASCARCASM_, and at Snapchat, it's NASCAR_CAS. It gets annoying, you know. I'm still trying to figure out Snapchat anyway, so I don't want to send people there yet.
Okay. Well, like I say, and I think, Brian, you'll agree with me, any parting comments before we let NASCAR Chasm go?
Oh, no, just say I appreciate you coming on the show. Always enjoy your funny perspective on the sport that we all enjoy covering and watching.
Excellent. I appreciate it, and I appreciate you guys following and whoever else. You know, that's why we never miss a tweet out, is because I feel like I so greatly owe every one of those people. Even if they followed for a little bit and unfollowed, which I completely understand because I'm pretty obnoxious. But, without them, tolerating me, I'd not be on this phone call with you guys. You know what I mean? It's I appreciate every single one of them for putting up with me for so long. And very much you guys for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Well, I'll tell you what, when all of the haters come out there, just know that you've got a whole googly gob of fans that are there behind you and supportive of everything that you do. So,
okay. Very much appreciated.
Okay. Take care now.
Cool. Thank you guys very much.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
All right. That was NASCAR Chasm, and that was a lot of fun, Brian.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. It's always interesting to hear him just talk about the sport and then put a few jabs in there as well, even at Tony Stewart and sitting in the fire suit. And, you know, it's always funny to listen to what he's going to come up with next. So, like you mentioned before the show, he's just very quick at it, too. You know, some of these things I can maybe think of, but it's 12 minutes later and it's already past the fact, and he's just right on top of it, so...
Exactly. It's like, and some of it is so simple. It's like, God, why didn't I think of that? That is so, that's pure genius. But yeah, he's just a really cool dude. And I had the pleasure of meeting him for the first time at Chicagoland this year. And, I'm glad he was accommodating and able to be on the show with us tonight. So that was pretty cool. Okay, so now we've got to catch up on some more conversation about our NASCAR weekend preview. And, Brian, I think we're ready to get into our Xfinity Series segment. There's a lot going on in the Xfinity Series as well, with some points battle happening there. So let's go ahead and chat a little bit about there. First of all, let's talk about that Rookie of the Year championship, but the Rookie of the Year title between Suarez and Darrell Wallace Jr. Darrell Wallace Jr. had an incident last week at the track, and NASCAR came down with the penalties this week. Your thoughts about that?
My thoughts about that are, I guess, a couple of things. We don't know exactly what was said. We've heard some things that obviously got pretty inappropriate. It sounds like Bubba may have made some comments about Brian Scott's wife, which I think is a little ridiculous, taking it away from the drivers and putting it onto their family. I also didn't really care for what he did, Scott did, by getting up in Wallace's window right away like that after the race, let the guys get out and discuss it from there. But I'll give Wallace credit. He did, I don't know if people have seen it yet, but he did come out and put a video on Twitter today, you know, apologizing for, you know, what happened. And, you know, things happen in the heat of the moment. And, you know, respect to him for, you know, stepping up and saying, you know, I'm sorry, I said some things that were inappropriate, and, you know, let's move forward. So, good deal for him.
Yeah.
I haven't heard yet what exactly it was that Brian Scott's I believe it's his motorhome driver did, because he's been suspended from NASCAR indefinitely. So I haven't really heard anything come out yet as to what his role was or what exactly he did to deserve that punishment. But I'm sure that'll somehow leak itself out here in the next several days.
Yeah, we'll have to keep our eyes and ears open there. But obviously the degree of the penalty for Brian Allen is enough that you know something major happened there. I was a little disappointed in the whole thing. I agree with you. I thought for Darrell Wallace Jr. to come up and get in his face so quickly after the race and practically inside his car to confront Brian Scott. And you know, at some point, they had the opportunity to walk away, and they did that to a degree, but then it resumed again in the motorhome lot. So, and I think that's where it just kept escalating. And you know, things just took a turn for the worst. And somehow Whitney Scott got involved in all of this, probably because of the name-calling from Darryl Wallace Jr. I'm sure that precipitated it. But at the same time, I think these were adults that maybe in retrospect they're going to look at this and say, man, I could have handled that a lot differently. you know, without a doubt. So I do think that, you know, hopefully they learned something from this experience, and we won't see it like that again. And I know, I get it, that in the heat of the moment, you know, you say and do things that you wouldn't typically say and do. But they needed that cooling off period, and somehow they never gave themselves that chance to just walk away and give themselves that cooling off period. They just kept going back at it and escalating it, and that's never a good thing. So, you know, just a word to the wise, you got to take a minute to just step away sometimes, especially in an emotional state like that. So really something, you know, to think about for the future. Not that they're listening, but just a thought.
Agreed.
But getting back to the whole points thing between Darryl Wallace Jr. and Daniel Suarez. Daniel Suarez is certainly doing well right now, but Darryl Wallace Jr. has kind of been gaining some points on him, and we still have, what, about six or seven more races here to go. So I think this is going to be something for fans to keep their eyes on, this Rookie of the Year title competition that's going on as well.
Yeah, and credit for Wallace for keeping it so close. I mean, I feel like Suarez has kind of been lights out, and as I said the other night, one of the most impressive Xfinity Series regulars, or maybe not even impressive is the right word, but the driver that's exceeded my expectations the most in the Xfinity Series this year have been Daniel Suarez. And he does have a 23-point lead over Wallace, but like you said, Wallace has kind of shaved a few points off over the last couple of weeks, and could get very very close in that battle as well as the season winds down.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And you know, Suarez had a bad race. We haven't seen that from him either. And that kind of helped the whole Wallace gaining points situation as well. So it was not his typical race, I think, at New Hampshire. So I look for him to come back for sure at Dover this weekend. So something for fans to keep their eyes on there. Now let's talk about Chase Elliott, because Chase Elliott is another driver when it comes to the championship points, he's the defending champion, and he's looking to kind of get things going in the right direction too.
Yeah, he is. And Dover has historically been a solid track for him. He's got two top five finishes and an average finish of 4.5 in his three starts there. So he has done quite well at Dover in the past. However, his championship battler opponent, if you will, Chris Buescher, has won the last race at Dover earlier this season, I should say. So it'll be a good battle between those two guys.
And also, don't forget Ty Dillon. Ty Dillon
is in
there too. And he's definitely going to be knocking on that door too. He's knocked 6 points off the lead from 25 points to now 19 points behind Buescher. So he's definitely looking to close that gap some more as well. Dillon has made 5 starts at Dover, and he's posted 4 top tens in those 5 starts. His average finish is 11.4. Not quite as good as what you were saying for Buescher and Elliott there, but I think he's definitely – those three are going to be 3 of the top drivers to watch this weekend.
Yeah, all the Xfinity Series regulars, definitely. I think all summer I've been waiting for either a driver to really step out and take the lead, or, you know, Elliott to kind of to make a move, and nothing's really happened. Buescher's just kind of continued to add a point or two here and there, and right now it looks like to me he's still the championship favorite, but I really think Elliott still has a chance to get something going here. And again, like you said, he can't count out Dylan as well, so we'll see if they're able to chop any points off this weekend. And after this weekend, there's five more races to go, so it'll be an interesting battle down the stretch for sure.
Absolutely, and I agree with you. Kudos to Chris Buescher for maintaining, because he's had a couple of rough races in here too, but he's been able to kind of hold his own through all of that. And keep in mind too, this is kind of a rough stretch for the Xfinity Series regulars, because they don't have any breaks between now and the end when the final championship race happens at Homestead. So they are really on a long stretch here.
Yeah, they are, for sure.
Okay, now Blaney is our winner from last weekend. What do you think of his chances for making it a back-to-back win coming into Dover this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely still strong when you come behind the wheel of that Team Penske number 22 car. They've always got a shot to go to victory lane for sure. And again, not that fans necessarily care about it as much, but they've got a tight owner's battle going between the 22 car and the 54 car out of the Gibbs shop. So it's important for those guys on the team to earn that championship as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that 22 car is also competing for an owner's champion. And if Blaney's going to be in that car, you know, he's been a big part of getting some of those owners' championship points. So I think he does have a really good chance of making it a back-to-back, and definitely add him to the drivers to watch this weekend. He's made two series starts at Dover. His best finish at Dover was in 2012, where he finished 13th. Last year, though, he started ninth but finished 69 laps down in 34th after getting caught up in an accident. So with that in mind as well, I'm sure he's looking for some redemption. He wants to come back and get a solid finish this weekend.
Exactly, for sure.
Okay. Moving on here, we've been talking about Chris Buescher. And what he's been able to do. He returns to complete the sweep. So he is the defending winner at the Monster Mile. And earlier this season, he and Scott Graves, his crew chief, played out the whole fuel mileage thing. They ended up winning that race over Matt Kenseth by more than 11 seconds. So it was a pretty solid finish for Buescher the last time out here at Dover International Speedway. So if he can do that, he becomes the seventh driver in series history to accomplish that feat. Robert Presley did it in 1992, Todd Bodine in 1993, Randy LaJoie in 96, Kyle Busch did it twice in 2010 and 2014, Carl Edwards in 2011, and Joey Logano had four straight wins between 2012 and 2013. So Chris Buescher would love to add his name to that list of drivers.
Yeah, he definitely would. I think, unfortunately, he's going to have some stiff competition from those pesky
right.
Cup Series regulars that are coming down there. Again, he got it done earlier in the year, so I think that victory always means more when you're able to beat, you know, some of the top racing drivers out there. But, you know, you take a look at the entry list, and you've got Kyle Busch and Denny Hamlin in the Gibbs cars. You've got Kyle Larson running in the 42. And I believe you've got, let me think here, Austin Dillon's also running in the RCR number 33. So you've got some big cup names that are dipping down and going to definitely put the pedal to the metal against some of the Xfinity Series regulars.
Yep, you got that right. Okay, so your final pick to win?
Oh, my final pick to win. You know what, I'm going to go, I like to stick with Xfinity Series regulars when I make an Xfinity pick, so I'm going to go with Chris Buescher going back to back.
You're going to go with Chris Buescher? Let's see. Yeah, that's a good pick. That's a really good pick. Let me see. I would like to pick Chris Buescher as well, but I always try to make it somebody different. so let me see who I can pick here. And I, too, like to try to – I'm going to say Ryan Blaney. I'm going to say Ryan Blaney pulls off the back-to-back. How's that?
Well, that's a good one. I can't argue with that pick either. So hopefully hopefully one of those Xfinity regulars gets it done and takes it to the Cup guys this weekend at Dover if and when they finally get to run that race.
Yeah, it's going to be an uphill battle. I want to point out Stanton Barrett's going to be in the race this weekend too, and he's got a movie coming out here real soon.
Yeah, that he does. For those that don't know, he's a stuntman and now a movie producer, you know, when he's not behind the wheel of a stock car. So definitely an interesting guy that's got a lot more going on than just driving race cars as well.
Yeah, so it's kind of cool that he's going to be in the race this weekend. So he's going to be promoting his first directorial piece. It's a motion picture, Navy SEALs versus the Zombies. It sounds like it's going to be a pretty interesting movie, and zombies are kind of a big deal these days, and it's kind of interesting that he's putting that movie together. But he's going to be racing in the Xfinity Series race this weekend, so I think that's kind of cool as well. Worth a shout out.
Yeah, definitely, and he'll have a paint scheme promoting the movie on his car this weekend as well. So.
All right, so that brings us, Brian, to our third chase race, which is an eliminator race at Dover. And I've had a couple conversations with people, in fact, today about that. You know, I love this eliminator rounds that we're doing in the chase now. I'm a big fan of it because when was the last time anybody looked forward to the race at Dover? And with this eliminator round, now Dover, everybody has to watch this race, and it's an exciting race to watch because you don't know until the race in who's going to be in and who's going to be out.
I agree. It's definitely ramped up things for the end of the season. I when they first went to it last year, I was skeptical. The one thing that I still don't like is the one final race. I wish that last round was a three-race round as well, and they did that a little bit differently. But I do love the rounds that we've got going now and the chase grids. Everyone can pick a grid. I've got a big group of friends that, you know, they don't even really follow racing. They kind of follow it because I watch it and write about it. You know, we all picked the chase grid this year. So it definitely kind of ramps up and gets some more people interested, and hopefully, you know, we'll draw some more long-term fans of the sport.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was a good move by NASCAR to do this, and I think it's brought a lot more excitement for the long run of the chase. It's only 10 races, right? But for the long haul of those 10 races, I think having the elimination rounds has really made it a lot more exciting. So let's talk a little bit about some of the clinch scenarios. You know, the big one that everybody is talking about is we're pretty sure that people like Jimmy Johnson is probably going to make it, right? We know that there's only two drivers, Denny Hamlin and Matt Kenseth. They're clinched. They're going on to the next round because they have wins. So we still have like people like Carl Edwards in fourth, Joey Logano, Jimmy Johnson. Those guys are probably safe. They're probably gonna move on to the next round as well, right?
Most likely. I mean, Johnson's got to finish just 25th or better. Odds are he's probably going to go out and win that race. Logano, 31st or better, and Edwards, 32nd or better. And they do that regardless of what any other driver does. They move on. And obviously, if other drivers struggle, they could finish worse than that and still move on. So I'd be willing to easily put those guys into the next round without much worry. I'm sure they're sleeping a little bit better than some of these other guys we're about to talk about.
Some of these other guys. This next group of guys, though, is where it could get a little bit iffy, because if any of them have a bad race and finish worse than their clinch spot, then it sends them out the door. And we're talking like Ryan Newman, Kurt Busch, Brad Keselowski, Martin Truex Jr., and Jeff Gordon. It sounds like they're pretty safe, but we've seen that bad things can happen to drivers like Kevin Harvick, last year's champion. So these guys are not immune to that, but so far they've not been making the same kind of mistakes. So what do you think of their chances here, these guys?
Oh, you know, kind of like you said, it's still always a risk. You look at not even them making a mistake, but what happened to Kyle Busch last week, cut a right front tire and hit the wall, and basically now he's kind of on the outside looking in going into this week. So this could happen to any of the drivers out there. Still, Newman, you know, Mr. Consistency last year, but the one thing he's got to worry about, he needs to finish 16th or better. Well, he's finished 18th or worse in two of the last three Dover races, so that could be a rough struggle for him. You know, Gordon's got to finish 10th or better to not worry about it. So, you know, you got a lot of drivers that these guys, you know, probably aren't sleeping too well this week because something could happen that's well beyond their control and knock them out in the first round.
Absolutely. But if they keep their focus and do what they've been doing, they're in a lot better shape than these next guys. and there's some surprising, almost shocking names that are in this group. Jamie McMurray, Dale Earnhardt Jr., he's one of the guys that ran out of gas last week. Kyle Busch, Paul Menard, Kevin Harvick, and Clint Bowyer. They're the ones that are losing sleep this week, I'd say.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if you told me that we could go into round two of the chase and potentially have Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, and Dale Earnhardt Jr. not still in the chase, I would have probably told you you're crazy. I know in my chase grid, I've got Harvick in my final four. I had Busch going to at least the third round, I believe. And, you know, Earnhardt Jr., I had advancing past the first round as well. So all three of those guys are a bit surprising to me. And, like, with Harvick, he's basically got to go out and win. Busch and Earnhardt are in a little bit better situation than that, but still anything can happen, and we could come, you know, Sunday night or, again, sometime in the week, whenever they get this race run with the rain, and three of the biggest names could be out of it.
Yeah, and like Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Kyle Busch, there's only a few points difference between their cutoff and being in and being out. So, you know, they might be able to race their way in and not necessarily have to get a win. Getting a win is the most assured way that they can get in. But they've got to have a good race. They can't run out of gas. They can't have a flat tire. They can't have pit crew mishaps. They've got to be on their game at Dover this weekend. Kevin Harvick is in a must-win situation, I think. He's 15th. And I don't think he's going to be able to race his way in other than winning. I think he's pretty much got to go in there and win. The bad news here is only one of these drivers can win.
Exactly. And Harvick Dover is definitely not one of his best tracks. He's down almost outside the top 10 in driver rating. He hasn't won there before.
Exactly.
Again, what this team has done last year in the championship and how strong they've been this year. But, you know, I expect them to be strong and run up front again. But, you know, a top five, unfortunately, at this point, isn't going to advance them unless you have several of these other names really struggle. So without a win, we'll be looking at round two of the chase kicking off without Kevin Harvick being part of the battle anymore.
Yeah, which is almost mind-boggling. And I'm sure it's messed up a lot of people's Sweet 16 grid, because a lot of people had Harvick in those last four at Homestead. And to be quite honest, there's people who had Dale Earnhardt in the final four. There's people who had Kyle Busch in the final four. So, you know, to have all three of those guys in this situation is almost mind-boggling.
I would agree.
Okay, so we'll have to wait and see what happens at Dover International Speedway this weekend, but that we're giving you a little bit of a synopsis there of what to kind of keep your eye on. The big news, I think, a lot of people knew that coming into the chase, Joe Gibbs was without a doubt they were the dominating group. A lot of people thought maybe they're peaking too soon, maybe they can't sustain this throughout the chase. Lo and behold, they've got the first two wins in the first two races of the chase for the NASCAR Sprint Cup. Are they going to continue, you think? Can Kyle Busch pull it off? Can Carl Edwards pull it off this weekend?
I really think they are. I mean, I think Edwards' advance is not much of a problem. And again, if you take out, you know, Busch with a flat tire, you know, just kind of bad luck last week, he'd be well up there and advancing as well. So that team just continues to show how strong they've been, and I think how strong they'll continue to be. I think we'll see one of them struggle probably in the next round, maybe through no fault of their own. I don't think all four cars will make it into the round of eight, but I've been wrong before and could be wrong again.
I think that would be amazing if that happens. I don't know. I agree with you. I'm not sure that it will, but I think if it does happen, it would just be absolutely an amazing feat.
Yeah, I would agree. But going into this weekend, if Harvick wants to win, obviously Jimmy Johnson's the guy he's going to have to contend with. Johnson's
that
in another league at Dover. I mean, 10 wins in his career. He has a 122.3 driver rating, the highest of anybody in the field, and has led a whopping 2,604 laps. To put that in perspective,
that's
the next highest
amazing.
Laps led there is Kyle Busch at 1,000. So it's definitely Dover has been Jimmy Johnson's house for quite some time, and he'll definitely, like you said, with what Harvick and Johnson had earlier this season at Chicagoland, it'd be kind of interesting if the last few laps come down to Johnson and Harvick on the track with, you know, Johnson not really needing the win, but Harvick needing the win to move on.
Yeah, but now here's the thing, though. We expected Johnson, we know he goes through a lull in that summer, that late summer lull, those last 10 races before the chase begins. He typically goes into a lull during that time frame, and a lot of people expect him to come on strong then when the chase begins. But I'm not so sure that's actually happened, that he's come on strong necessarily in these first two races of the chase. The stats certainly are in his favor at Dover. There's no question about it. There's nobody better than Jimmy Johnson at Dover International Speedway. But, I by the way, this is going to be Johnson's 500th start at Dover International Speedway. So I know he'd love to get a win at the track this weekend. But it's going to be interesting to see what does happen with Johnson, because this is a track that he excels at. And if he doesn't do well at this track, I think a lot of people are going to be worried about what's going on with Jimmy Johnson.
Yeah, I would agree with that. This weekend will be telling for maybe how strong they're going to be throughout the final seven races of the chase.
Exactly. Now, another driver who does well, and we mentioned him earlier, is one of the drivers that has swept Dover, is Kyle Busch. And a win would come in pretty handy right now for Kyle Busch.
Yeah, that it would. He's got the third best driver rating at Dover as well, so look for him to be strong and up there in contention. And I think he'll move on. I've got him advancing still, even taking a look at it now.
Yeah, I really think Busch has a chance to go on, even if he doesn't win at Dover. But I think he wants to dispel the whole notion that has been kind of the monkey on his back, that he kind of, you know, doesn't have his focus or he loses his focus during the chase. He wants to dispel that monkey and kind of let fans know he's here to contend. So I look for him to have a really strong run at Dover. But, again, he can't have any mistakes. And really, that's what this championship comes down to, is who makes the least amount of mistakes. He's had his mulligan. He's got to come back strong at Dover.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. He has had his mulligan for this round and needs a strong finish to be able to move on and, like you said, dispel all the talk about how he just can't get it done when it comes chase time. He's, you know, got four wins this year and 11 less starts than everyone else in the series has. You'd think that he was definitely a championship favorite coming in, aside from the fact that he has struggled so much when we get to the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of the Bush fans want to see that same kind of focus that he came back with. When he came back from his medical leave, they want to see that same kind of focus out there at Dover, and for him to come up with that win. So we'll have to wait and see. And then we've already mentioned the rope-a-dope that Harvick's on right now. Harvick seems hopeful that he can maybe pull off a miracle here. There was a press conference with him earlier this week. I think he has to come off kind of hopeful. That he can make this happen. But again, I think that they really, really, really have to make sure that there are no issues there.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely started the chase off talking a big game at Media Day, saying that they were ready to pound the Joe Gibbs cars into the ground. And he definitely came out confident. I still think he has that confidence. I mean, he sounded very confident in himself and his team today during the teleconference they had mm-hmm. earlier this morning. And if they don't get a win, it definitely won't be from lack of effort. That team, it seems him and Robbie Childers have gelled so well together and continue to support each other. They weren't throwing each other under the bus with the fuel issue last week. And Harvick even said during the teleconference today that he's not sure what happened. And honestly, he doesn't get involved in that. That's his team. He trusts his team and he trusts Childers, and he's ready to just move on and put that behind him.
Mhm. And I think that's smart. I think he has to do that. He's got to keep his focus on what's ahead and trying to do the best he can. So, who's your race pick?
You know, I have a hard time picking against Jimmy Johnson, but I also don't like always picking the favorite. I think mm-hmm. Kyle Busch is going to get the win this weekend. And kind of give him the momentum going in into the rest of the chase. He's got the third best driver rating at Dover. He has led 1,000 laps there in his career. So I think that I think he'll get the win this weekend. I think Harvick will be a factor. Johnson will be a factor. It'll also be interesting to see what four drivers will not advance. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I've got as my guys not advancing: Clint Bowyer, Paul Menard, and you know those are my two for sure, and I kind of keep playing around with who else I don't think will advance. I kind of thought Jamie McMurray was going to advance on. I picked him in the grid. We talked with him at Chase Media Day extensively, and he just seemed really focused, and I thought that team was going to get it done, but they could very well be on the outside looking in again come Sunday.
Yeah, I unfortunately, I think we're going to see some shocking things happen this weekend, and, you know, if somebody has a bad day, a lot of these guys that are on the inside could find themselves on the outside real easily. And you're right. Jamie McMurray has been very steady. He's the highest of the group that's on the borderline there. You know, he's ahead of Dale Earnhardt. He's ahead of Kyle Busch right now. So Jamie McMurray could very well pull off something really great this weekend and advance on. But I agree with you. I think Paul Menard, Clint Bowyer, those are the guys that probably won't make it on. And it's so hard to pick who those other two guys are going to be. It really, really is. I agree with you with Busch too, but I'm going to pick somebody. Because, again, I'm going to try to pick somebody different. You took my race winner from me again. I'm going
I'll
say,
let you pick first next time.
I'm going to say Carl Edwards may surprise a few people this weekend. And he may pull off a win this weekend. How do you like that for a dark horse?
I think that's a solid pick as well. You can't go wrong, I don't think, with any of the four cars out of the JGR stable at this point. They all seem to be so strong. And, you know, when it comes down to my fourth, I think Harvick is going to miss out as well. So I've got Harvick, Bowyer, and Menard missing out. And I think that fourth guy missing out is going to come down to between McMurray and Earnhardt Jr.
Yeah, isn't that sad? That it makes you really sad. Because I think a lot of people thought Dale Earnhardt had a chance to go all the way this year. I think a lot of people think the same thing of Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick. And to lose any one of those guys is going to be devastating, and there's a chance that two of those guys may not make it. Or there's even a chance that all three of them don't make it, which would just really be a huge storyline if that happened. But,
That would be kind of mind-blowing.
It would be mind-boggling. Absolutely. And who knows? Kevin Harvick just might pull off the miracle win of this chase, pull off that win. So, again, fans are going to have to tune in to see what happens this weekend. Now, let me just real quick give the details here. I didn't tell you about the Xfinity Series race. Saturday, October 3rd, that race coverage is on NBCSN starting at 3 p.m. The green flag should wave sometime around 3:30, and they're going to go 200 miles. That's 200 laps at Dover International Speedway. The Sprint Cup Series guys are racing the AAA 400. The coverage begins at NBCSN at 2 p.m. Eastern Time with the green flag around 2:30. 400 miles, 400 laps. Fans will be watching for that particular race. So Sunday, October the 4th. Do not miss these races. This is where it gets real exciting. And if you're a fan, you want to be there or be square, right?
Yeah, I would agree. The only wild card this weekend is going to be the weather at Dover, and hopefully they're able to get the races in and everyone traveling to the event stay safe. They're obviously going to get some pretty nasty weather there, but the latest projections I saw is that Sunday doesn't look too terrible for rain anymore. I guess not as terrible as it looked. So maybe we will see some racing at some point over the weekend, and hopefully it doesn't run too much into the week, because it's obviously an added cost for all those teams, media, and everyone involved in the sport to have to stick around for extra days and be away from their families.
Absolutely, and that, thank you for bringing that up again. I keep forgetting about the bad weather out there, because that could change up things a whole lot this weekend. So you want to definitely keep your eyes and ears posted to what's going on this weekend with the weather and any changes in the schedule. So any other news this week that you want to make sure we talk about, or did we cover everything?
I mean, I think we pretty much covered everything. Kind of the one thing I wanted to add on to what NASCAR Chasm was saying earlier about Stewart, and I thought the same thing. He just seemed relieved the other day during the announcement, smiling.
Yeah.
And, you know, he mentioned Eldora at the truck race, how he was. I've been down to the Chili Bowl the last couple of years, and Stewart was down there. For those that don't know, Chili Bowl is one of the biggest sprint midget racing indoor races in the country. They get 300-some entries down there. It's great 4 or 5 days of racing. Get the chance to go down there with my dad and a few friends every year. But Stewart was down there working the track, out there again on the tractor, down there in the infield the whole time, and just looked so happy. And I made the comment on Twitter the other day that was the first time I've really seen him with a smile on his face. I haven't seen a smile on his face since then. And, you know, someone else commented back, the only other time he did was Eldora for the truck race, you know. So I think he's kind of in the kind of that realm of happiness at this point. And like NASCAR Chasm mentioned as well, he can kind of go do anything now with everything he's involved in. If he wants to go run a race, he can run a race. You know, he's obviously still the owner at Stewart Haas. He's got his, you know, dirt teams. It's just, you know, I think the world is his oyster, and it'll be interesting to kind of follow what he does now that he's officially retiring from Cup competition.
Yeah, I think it will be. And you know, I mentioned chapters before, and we know this is one chapter that's closing for Tony Stewart. And a lot of fans are going to miss seeing him on the track. I know what it's like to have your favorite driver leave the sport and not be on the track. And it just doesn't feel the same when your favorite driver isn't out there, and I can certainly appreciate where fans are coming from that perspective. But if you think of Tony Stewart as the man and as a person, it really does seem like it's the right thing to do. He's closing the chapter at the right time. He's opening a new chapter in his life, and I think he will be happier. You know, I just have to echo. I know it's an echo from what you guys have already said, but I have to agree. I think it's going to be a positive. I think he's going to be happier. And I think in the end, I think he may introduce fans to all different kinds of different racing you know, when you think about the world of outlaws and sprint racing. And if you haven't already followed him in there, he may bring a whole new legion of fans to those types of racing. And he mentioned the Rolex 24. I would love to see Tony racing the Rolex 24. So I think this is a very good thing.
Yeah, I would agree. And not only that, I'm interested to see how he'll do next year. He's kind of got that maybe weight lifted off a little bit now that the decision's been made. You know, the talk of changing up the packages next year, going with the low downforce package. You know, he could make some noise in his final season.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and that's an excellent point. I can't wait to see what he does next season. And did they say that Clint Bowyer is going to be going to H. Scott Motorsports next season?
Yeah, I believe that is the plan. I think Clint has media availability, I believe, tomorrow at Dover, where it sounds like they might officially announce you know, what's going to happen. There and what the plan is, and I assume sponsor 5-Hour Energy is probably following him as well, so we'll see what H. Scott's going to do.
Okay, so fans definitely want to keep their ears you know, open to hearing that news as well. So I think it's all good news, and Brian, I want to say thank you to you for filling in here on our Thursday night radio show. I was hoping Chris might be able to tune in or, you know, join us at some point this evening. But definitely give him a follow, Nitro1 on Twitter. He's always got his eye on what's going on in the NASCAR world, and I'm sure he'll be happy to keep everybody posted. So he'll be out at Las Vegas for the Camping World Truck Series race this weekend. And next week, I need to talk to you about next week. I don't know. Kyle said he'd be available for the next couple of weeks if you need a breather on Thursday nights, or we can have all three of you. Not all three of you, but you and Kyle on the show along with Niter is where the third person comes in.
Yeah,
so I'll leave that up to you.
Yeah, we could definitely do that next week. I always like to kind of banter back and forth and get everyone's ideas and thoughts, and it's great to have, you know, more opinions, and I'd be interested to hear everyone else's race picks and favorites and things to watch out for. So two minds are always better than one, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Okay, now also we mentioned Brandon Jones is going to be on the show this Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern time. So look for our Monday night show, which is a review of the weekend of racing. That starts at 8:30 p.m. on Monday, and we'll be right back here next Thursday night, October the 8th, at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time for our NASCAR weekend preview. And that weekend, we'll be previewing the races that will be taking place at Charlotte Motor Speedway. So, again, thanks, Brian. It's been a blast. I really had a good time tonight with NASCAR Chasm and with you, and I look forward to doing it again.
I do as well, thanks, and hopefully we get to see some racing this weekend on time and as rain-free as possible, and everyone that's going to Dover, be safe, and anyone that's going to Vegas, I hope they win some money while they're out there.
You got it. Okay, take care now, and be safe out there, race fans, and we'll see you on the other side on Monday night. Take care now.
Have a good one, everyone.